Disclaimer, the views and opinions you hear on this show are not the opinions of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. From Orange County, California, this is the Endcast. I'm Zach Birchie, and as you know, Justin is out this week in Singapore, so my co-host is Bamboo. How's it going, Bamboo?
Great, absolutely great.
Yeah, everything going
everything's
okay.
Peachy keen.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So you're not writing Shelf Life really anymore. Have you been watching any anime? I mean, I imagine you took a little bit of vacation from it.
I have been watching a few titles here and there. One of the last titles that I remember watching a lot of was Miracle Train, which actually I still keep watching that show even though I hate it. I hate it with a burning passion, but I still watch it.
So why are you...
I know, it's so terrible. There's something about it. It's not even a guilty pleasure. It's just that it's one of those things in which it's so bad that I keep coming back just to bring up that good anger.
You watch it to get angry at how stupid it is?
Yeah.
You do that with a lot of stuff, though.
It's true.
I would imagine this Friday you'll be doing that.
Yeah, I will be doing that, actually, and I know exactly what you're talking about, and I will be doing it, yes.
Are you going to the midnight show of New Moon, Bamboo?
I can't do the midnight show. I can't bring myself to do that. Because I'm pretty sure I will get physically harmed in the theater if they hear me booing at all.
It's got to be the most... That's got to be the worst audience to see it with, is the midnight. Especially, you live near a college.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be the worst. And Irvine. Oh, my God, that has to be. Hell. Just pure hell. So we both did watch something that's similar. We both watched Funimation put out Witchblade on Blu-ray, which I never got around to seeing. I think I can safely say I avoided it for the same reasons most people would avoid it. The ridiculous character designs. But eventually I popped in the Blu-ray, which looks okay. It doesn't look spectacular. I think it's just an upscale. Yeah. I'm not sure. But I was kind of surprised, and for the first five or so episodes, I was like, this is actually surprisingly not that fan service-y. Like, there's not that much fan service, and there's some transformation sequences, but it's kind of it. Like, it's just sort of a standard, like, thriller mystery type of thing. Then I got to the sixth episode, where the girls are, like, fighting and busting each other's armor and, like, about to kiss at one point. And then
moaning,
it gets, moaning, and there's all this there's all this orgasmic sound. And, yeah, then I was like, oh, okay. Like, here's where all the fan service is. I watched up through, like, episode seven, and even with the fan service in it, I mean, I think it's easy to point to that show and be like, oh, this, look at this, you know, totally exploiting. But it just seems kind of tame. I mean, it's not really as over the top as I thought it would be. And I've only seen the first third of it, but I don't know. Have you seen the whole thing?
Yeah, I haven't seen the whole thing. I actually think it's kind of fun. To me, it's a lot like watching or reading an American comic book. Like, it has that vibe to me.
I would imagine, yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's a Japanese product, though, so then...
No, but even it's totally based on an American... Yeah, and it's direct adaptation of an American...
Even then, like, it can have, like a very... you know, heavy anime feelings, you know, but it doesn't. It feels very American, with the exception of, you know, all those breast jokes and the old man who just stares at her chest, bobbling up and down every 5 seconds.
Yeah, the old man character. I was kind of surprised at how boring the production design is. Aside from the girls in their crazy fantasy armor, it's pretty boring looking. Everything's kind of gray and sort of washed out. Everything looks boring. The cars all look... There's not a lot of imagination in the design of the world or any of the other characters except for the girls in the crazy armor.
But I imagine that's because they didn't really need to make anything else colorful. They were like, okay, we're going to put all of our brain power into making her suit somehow cling on with their little, like, metal tendrils. Yeah. I don't even know how it stays on her chest. But which is awkward because in every single cover art that I've ever seen, they dig into her breast in such a manner that it looks really awkward because her skin bulges out around
it's pretty,
the tendrils.
It's kind of disgusting.
It is gross. It's a little gross.
It's kind of
sometimes
disgusting.
She has multiple breasts and I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, well, the animation for the first three, the typical Gonzo, the animation in the first two episodes is okay and then it turns to total shit by like episode six or seven. So that was a little bit of a letdown. I just thought it was boring looking. Aside from those characters, from the girls, because even the bad guys, which I haven't gotten to the bottom of the mysterious plot of why, the guys turn into boring looking creatures. But it's just like this mass of metal pieces that I don't know. I thought it was uninspired. Like everything aside from the sort of clashing fighting characters just looks like the most boring anime in the world. It reminded me of, like, Trinity Blood? No, Speedgrapher.
Speedgrapher.
Speedgrapher had a similarly, yeah, like, boring urban landscape that, ugh, I didn't... But overall, I was pleasantly surprised that it was not as ridiculously exploitative as it could have been, and I did, even though the main character seems to just vacillate between concerned mom and angry bitch at everything all the time, like, she's such a bitch to everybody. Like, does that character stay that mad throughout the entire show? Because unless she's around her kid, who's annoying and looks nothing like her, by the way.
Well, you know what? To answer that, you have to continue watching the show.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sure it's not really her child or something stupid like that. I'm sure it's something like that. I don't know if I'll continue watching it. I also popped in the first disc of the Dragon Box, whoa, which got sent out. Yeah, it's Dragon Ball.
It's Dragon Ball Z.
It's Dragon Ball Z. I mean, I guess if you're a big fan of the show, it's something to get excited about.
I guess so.
It's like $100, you get 40 episodes, which is a good deal for Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
The packaging is nice, but it's, I mean...
To be fair, it looks pretty much like every other Dragon Ball Z that has been released so far. And I guess, like, the aspect ratios are normal now, but...
It's normal because those cropped releases that they put out where they forced it into widescreen, they didn't really look good. I mean, there were a lot of problems with those releases, and this is... I would prefer to watch it this way just because it is correct. It's like, have you ever seen how they awkwardly stretch, like, Family Guy episodes?
Yeah, yeah.
The Dragon Ball releases weren't quite that bad, but they just cut off, like, the top and bottom. So you'd have, like, someone's grimacing face, and you'd get the bottom of their eyes and the top of their mouth and nothing else. It just looked super awkward. It looked totally wrong. So this looks pretty good. However, I've seen the first, like, few episodes of Dragon Ball Kai where they remixed it and they edited the episodes together, mm-hmm, and condensed the entire 300-episode series into 100 episodes. And the pacing is so much better in that version. I watched the first episode on this, and I was like, I can't, I've fallen asleep. I mean, it's so slow. Even in the first episode, it just feels so slow. Like, everything happens at a snail's pace. So I'm looking forward to, I hope they put Dragon Ball Kai out on Blu-ray. That's a release I would look, mm-hmm, forward to. Because I do enjoy the show. It is fun,
right,
to watch.
I mean, I vastly prefer Dragon Ball to Dragon Ball Z. I mean, right. Dragon Ball Z has always just, it's kind of interesting, you know, but I've always preferred the short little movies they put out.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, you know, like 45 minutes of just like, boom, 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 gonna, you know, kick the bad guy in the face, bah! And then like some guy gets thrown against the wall, Goku gets in trouble, but then like, you know, Piccolo comes and like, oh, let's band together, we're gonna be friends, and then like all is saved. It's much easier than watching, like, going through 20 episodes of Dragon Ball Z to pretty much get the same story, but instead it's like 15 minutes and you're done.
Yeah.
So it's much nicer.
Yeah, they get it over with much, much quicker. The one thing I have to do, Justin's not here and he won't let me do this when he is here, is I have to mess around. Because I don't know if people know, we have a super high-tech audio recording studio here. That's why you can hear my refrigerator hum in the background. Super high-tech audio recording studio. Basically, we have this little soundboard and it can do some pretty sweet special effects. Do you want to see them?
I do.
They're pretty rad. Now, the first cool one, we can sound like we... are,
whoa.
Like now we're doing the show in a cave.
Oh, wow.
Hey, Bamboo.
Oh, hey, Zach, where are you? I don't know where
I'm in a cave.
What?
I'm in a cave talking about anime. okay, what else do we have? A lot of these are just, like, similar sounding.
This one's kind of cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of pretty weird, like, this one's more like... Like, I'm out in space.
Yeah.
Here we are in the outer reaches of... Oh, fuck that up. Okay. my favorite is... Which robot voice? Hang on, I think this... Yeah, see, here we go.
Oh, wow.
1980s robot voice.
Or maybe we can sing some Kanye right now.
Bamboo, I find your opinions on anime to be insufficient.
Okay. Oh, wow. That's... No, we should do the rest. Oh,
hang on. No, this is my favorite. This is my absolute favorite. Hang on a second. See, this is like...
Like you're on the phone and you're trying to disguise your voice. So, you know, you took me down to the basement and then, you know, like on Dateline NBC. Or
you sound like a pedophile, actually.
You want some candy, little boy?
Okay, but the fun thing to do with this is if you pitch your voice up, it sounds like a 1970s, like, space alien. So it's like,
I'm here to bring you an intergalactic message of peace.
Teletubby. We should just go back to the cave.
Yeah, okay, well, let's...
the entire show...
Here we are.
In a cave.
Back in the cave. All right, we gotta stop fucking around with this.
Scooby-Doo.
The treasure's gotta be around here somewhere, Bamboo. All right, we have to stop. Okay, so now that I've gotten that out of my system... So, anything else you've been doing this week? You mentioned you were playing Modern Warfare.
I was playing Modern Warfare, too, and it's been really fun. It's been sucking up a lot of time.
I can't play those games.
What?
Anything that glorifies the military too much, I just can't handle it. Like, I'm okay with the multiplayer, but I guess I'm too much of a hippie to do the, like, oorah military.
Oh, it's so much fun. See, I love the military. I love our military. Like, I am all, like, gung-ho, like, ah!
Yeah. Don't turn this into a support the troops thing.
No, I mean, it's not about supporting the troops. Like, I love the idea of, like military, big government, secret CIA, blah, like that. I love that kind of stuff.
Right, okay.
But also, I mean, I have been telling myself not to buy that special version that comes with the night vision goggles. Uh-huh. I mean, I don't need it, obviously, because it's like $150 or something. But
yeah,
it's kind of cool.
Pretty... ridiculous.
It's nerdy. It's super nerdy.
It's not. No. It is not nerdy. There is nothing nerdy about that. It's excessive and it's collectible, but that's like saying owning a Ferrari is nerdy. No, it's not.
No, but there's...
You cannot get more mainstream than Modern Warfare. That's like, again, it's like saying buying the special edition of Madden is nerdy. It's not nerdy.
There are separate... Okay, I think there are... At some point, it crosses a nerd threshold. Like, you can buy Madden, and Madden's not nerdy, but if you were to buy the special edition of Madden with, like, a replica Brett Favre jockstrap, then it would be nerdy.
No, it's not.
Because you could be a sports nerd.
No, it's not, because nobody would call you a nerd for owning that. No one. People would walk in your house on football day, you'd have your big screen, you'd have your face painted. You're not a nerd, you're a sports fan. You walk into somebody's home room on a Sunday and they're playing Dungeons and Dragons... They're nerds. The word has to mean something.
Well,
you can't just take
any
display of fandom as nerdy. That doesn't count. Then it doesn't mean anything.
You don't think having, like, special edition night vision goggles is kind of nerdy? Because you paid that extra amount of money just to have a slightly cooler version of a video game.
Yes, and you get the night goggles, and you show them to your stupid frat buddies, and everyone has a laugh, and then that's it.
Yeah.
It's not... the word nerdy has to mean something. Like, nerd has to be a specific thing.
All right, so what is a nerd? Tell me what a nerd is.
It can't just be everything. The tip of, you know exactly what a nerd is. A nerd is somebody who sits at home at night and watches Witchblade on Blu-ray like I was doing last night. That is a nerdy
that's
thing
fair.
To do.
Okay,
owning
that's...
the Dragon Box is a nerdy thing to do.
Okay, you're a nerd.
Okay, yeah, so are you. in some moments.
Although I was speaking of, I guess, of a nerd clash between nerds and then like mainstream, I've been realizing lately that I've been seeing a ton of video game commercials on. During, like, Sports Center or,
yeah.
Like, you know, Monday Night Football, things like that. I mean, in the past, you know, you've seen ads on TV for, you know, for video games. But, like, I was watching Sports Center for, like, 4 hours, and every 5 minutes, it was like, you know, you see those eyes peering at you, and it's like Assassin's Creed 2.
Yeah. Well, you have to understand, though, video games are more profitable than movies now. Modern Warfare 2 made over $300 million on its first day of release. Its first day of sales was $300 million or more. So it is so mainstream that it's like when Transformers 2 is coming out, there was a commercial for it every 10 minutes. So now when Assassin's Creed comes out, which is a game they spent however $40 million to make,
right.
They want those first day 100 million, 200 million plus sales. So they, you know, they buy ads on NFL. And that's the way things are now. I mean, it doesn't get any more mainstream than that. It's games used to be a nerdy thing.
Right,
now
right.
They're
all
super,
right.
And they still are. I mean, you know, I'm playing a Dragon Age, which is nerdy. I mean, that is a nerdy thing to play. It's a high fantasy role playing game.
More nerdy than Modern Warfare 2 for sure.
Yes, absolutely. But games can't get any more mainstream. And it'd be fun. It's funny because back in the day, people used to talk about how they wanted anime to be that mainstream. Could you imagine seeing ads for like Tsubasa in the middle of your NFL game? Like that would just be weird.
This halftime report is sponsored by the Dragon Box.
I mean, it'd be nice if we were all making that much money. That certainly would be great.
And so during the splash screen, you see like Naruto, like he's like running through the forest with a football under his arm, like Sasuke, go long.
Oh, God.
That would be terrible.
Okay, well, we have a huge panel, and our second segment's probably going to run long. I will just warn you now, but let's go ahead and bring our guests in. Back. My guests this week are, we've got a panel here. We've got Mike Toole. As everybody knows, Mike, you had your own episode, but now you're just a supporting cast member. Sorry about that. We've got Brad Rice, who runs JapanEditor.com. You're editor-in-chief there?
Yes, that's correct.
Great. Thanks for being on the show. And Clarissa Grafeo from Anime World Order, everybody's favorite podcast. Thanks for being on the show.
No problem.
Our topic this week is reviews. I just wanted to sort of go over, like, anime reviews, the best way to do them, the worst way to do them, because there seems to be an endless amount of chatter about the right way to review anime. And all three of you are pretty prolific critics. At least, Chris, you do a lot on the show, and then Mike, you do a lot for print, and Brad, obviously, you do it on JapanEditor. So what I wanted to first get, and Bamboo obviously wrote Shelf Life for 5 years, so I think she's a little qualified to talk about this. What I wanted to first get was just to go around and get your personal sort of philosophy, your approach to writing a review and what it should be and what you're sort of aiming for. And I guess I'd like to start with Mike.
All right. Well, I'm going to cheat and drop a quote. And the quote I'm going to drop goes like this. Subjectivity is the only possible approach to reviewing. What is a review but an opinion? Those who call for you to be objective are revealing that they have not given the matter a moment's serious thought. Most times, those calling for objectivity are essentially saying they wish you had written a review that reflected their subjective opinion. That's Roger Ebert, and he summed it up pretty well. A complaint I hear a lot is, a reviewer should be more impartial. I disagree. A reviewer should be very partial, very subjective.
Yeah, my favorite thing on that is an impartial review is a plot synopsis. That's pretty much it. Brad, what's your take?
Basically, I guess I try to write from the gut more than anything. The way that we do things on JapanEditor at this point is simply either we recommend it or we don't. And so I'll do like a paragraph long summary, maybe two, of the title, whatever I happen to be dealing with, followed by what I liked, why I liked it, and sort of what that means. And that's really about it that I found that works for my readers, is they want to get an idea, but they don't want like, a 10 paragraph dissertation on the piece.
And Clarissa, what about you?
There's pretty much two things that I generally try to do. I guess maybe three. I do try and give a little bit of default information about what the hell it is that I'm talking about. I don't like to go into super detailed plot summaries. If you want that, you can go to the official website for the show or to Wikipedia or whatever. But I do talk a little bit about the basic premise. Then after that, I try to discuss my reactions to it and sort of what I think was good and bad about it. And then the third thing that I usually try and do, if possible, is contextualize it. So if I can talk about the specific piece as part of the overall history of anime or manga, or if I can talk about it in the context of the genre that it's a part of, if it's a remake of something, I try and talk about it in the context of the original, so on and so forth, just to kind of position it somewhere and discuss it in relation to other things, because I think that that's usually helpful.
Pretty good there. Bibu, what about you? What's your personal sort of philosophy?
I've actually really lucked out in the sense that with writing Shelf Life, I was allowed to pretty much hey, I hate this, I like this, I love it, whatever.
It was very I-driven.
Yeah, it was very, like, I-driven, I'm just talking about, like, me, and it worked out really well.
A job you were particularly well-suited for, I might add.
I do love talking about myself, so it worked out really well.
I agree completely 100% with Mike, and my boss, Chris McDonald, always says, a good review will tell you whether or not you're going to like a show, negative or positive. And I agree with that I agree with that to an extent. I think in this day and age, and I used to have a different philosophy on this, but personally, in this day and age, there's so much opinion out there, so much opinion. Striving to be the perfect review is not necessary. There are 1,500 other people doing the exact same thing you're doing. So now I think the goal is to be entertaining and interesting to read and provide a unique perspective. I think that's sort of my new kind of outlook on this, because there's so much of it. I mean, there are countless anime blogs out there. And so why not go for the opinion that's, and not force it, but go for perspectives and opinions that are a little bit different than you might see everywhere else. So, to me, like in this day and age, and that's specific to this particular time in history, I think, is to reach for that unique opinion. Now, everybody sort of argues about the best and worst way to write a review. And we sort of talked a little bit about our personal philosophies, but I'm curious, is there a wrong way to go about doing this, besides the obvious, super fanboy, love it or hate it kind of a thing? Or is that a bad way to do it? I mean, if you had to say, like, don't do this when you're writing a review, what would it be? And I guess, Bamboo, I'll start with you.
I think the worst thing to do in a review is to be, like, hyper aware of everyone else's opinion about a show. To the point in which if you dislike a show that you think other people will like, that you won't even say your own opinion. You say, you know, like, well, the show is really bad, but, you know, like, if you're a four-year-old child who also really likes ponies and etc., I'm sure you'd love it. Like, it crosses a line at some point in which your opinion just becomes incredibly diluted.
Yeah, we actually fired somebody for admitting in public that he will never write a negative review, because every single review, he will just say, he'll find the target audience and say, if you like this, you'll like this show.
Really?
I remember that guy.
You remember, you know who I'm talking about. I don't know what happened to him, but I did find his former ADP business card in my closet. Just the other day. And we shit-canned him, because that's not a... Maybe I'm wrong on that, but that's totally bankrupt. That's a shitty way to write a review, is to just say, if you like homosexual ninjas piloting robots, you'll love, you know? I mean, then you're Earl Dittman, who, I don't know if you guys know who Earl Dittman is. Mike, you probably know who I'm talking about.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't really even know. I think at that point, that kind of ceases to be a review and sort of becomes ad copy.
Yeah, it's a product guide. But, I mean, Brad, what would you say is, like, the biggest faux pas you can make when you're writing a review?
The biggest problem that I usually run into, especially when, like, I brought on interns or new writers and they want to do their first review, I'll get something where I get way too much plot summary, or they talk about, like, every little thing, like all the little in-jokes that might have happened across, like, a few episodes or an entire volume of manga. And I'm like, you need to cut that out, because, I mean, you've got, like, 12 paragraphs here, but 11 of them are just plot summary, and there's barely, I can't tell if I would like this, or you've just told me everything, and so I have no point in buying that. That's probably what annoys me the most. And that's what I tend to see on a lot of minor blogs, is I will literally just get that plot summary and they pass that off as a review.
Yeah, I mean, there are very famous, well, not very famous, popular and well-known critics that do that almost relentlessly, where it's 9 pages of plot summary and then, I kind of liked it, B+. You know, that's the review. But yeah, Mike, do you have any particular, like, just peccadilloes, you know, one thing you hate to see in a review?
Well, this is, again, something that I can speak about from experience, and this happened. This is a trap I fell into a lot when I first started writing regularly, and that's just following into a routine when it comes to writing reviews. Now, if you look at my old content on AnimeDump.com, you'll notice that an awful lot of the reviews there start off with, you know, pretty generic lead-in paragraph. 2 to 3 paragraphs of plot summary, 2 to 3 paragraphs of description of technical details, and then kind of a climactic statement about what I thought about the whole thing. And as the years have gone on, I found it's harder, but it's much more satisfying to try something a little different, rather than, you know, opening with, no, I'm going to talk about such and such from this company. You know, you open with something a little more interesting, like, I freaking hate blue hair, and all these characters have blue hair. This is terrible.
Wow, yeah. And I hate blue hair, too. Okay, so, Clarissa, anything that you just see as, like, a pet peeve or just the biggest no-no?
Well, I agree with some of the other stuff that's been stated, but just for the sake of throwing something else in there, other than that, I would say my biggest issue with people who are doing reviews as opposed to just casually posting their thoughts is people who can't explain to me why they have the reaction they have or why they formed the opinion they do. I mean, obviously, sometimes you're just going to have a subjective reaction and that's fine. But I want to be able to understand, at least to a certain extent, what it was about the show or movie or manga that made you have that reaction or that made you think of it that way. And some people just aren't as good at explaining that, and that kind of bugs me.
You know, that's a really good point, and I think you'd be surprised at the sheer number of people out there who are writing reviews, like blog-style reviews. It's not just like they go into a forum and say, I liked this cartoon or I didn't like this cartoon. People who fancy themselves critics who do that all the time. It's basically a gut reaction that they don't explain, and then they just say, you'll like it. I have actually a story about this. You guys know the show Magical Girl Lyrical Nanoha, right?
You guys are, God.
You guys are familiar with that? Well, it has a lot of really hardcore fans. And we both,
I've noticed.
Yeah, and I believe it was Carl Kimlinger, who is one of our more firebrand critics, wrote a middling review, and immediately the fans just jumped on it. I mean, they leapt down his throat faster than they're going after Erin Finnegan for her Clannad review this week. and this one girl in particular claimed to be an associate editor of some website and just kept harping on this review. Every thread she would go in and say, well, this isn't as bad as that Nanoha review. I could write something better. And so I went to her and I said, oh, okay, write me a better review. Write me your review of this show. And if it's up to my standards, I'll post it on the front page. And her attitude was really shitty. She was always like, oh, yeah, I guess I'll help out your editorial department. Like, real cocky, like, just shitty attitude. And so she turns in a review, and it was exactly what Clarissa was just talking about. Literally, five paragraphs of saying, this isn't your typical Magical Girl show, without one sentence explaining why it's different. You know, just describing the plot and saying, and that's not like you normally see. And it's like, how? Like, you're not explaining any of this. Three edits later, three passes, I sent it back to her three times with corrections, saying, clarify, clarify, clarify. She finally comes back to me and says, well, the people that are helping me copy edit this thing, they say it's good. Fuck you!
Right, because consensus equals reality.
Yeah, yeah, not only that, like, apparently she doesn't understand what an editor is. Like, her job is to please me, not her copy editors. But that was exactly the substance of that review, and I think a lot of otaku, for a lot of anime fans, it is just a gut reaction. They're not really thinking that much about what they see. Yeah. And I think a lot of fans are intimidated and threatened by actual analysis. I mean, have you guys experienced that? Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, all the time. More in game stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody have any examples?
Lovina.
Okay. Lovina, tell us about that.
Well, on the surface, it's very light, enjoyable fare about a dude and a bunch of ladies. When you start to examine it with a really sharply, kind of archly critical eye, just picking apart the problems with the plot and the characters, I've had people take great offense at that and write me long letters wishing for a very graphic death on my part. It's little things like just like pointing out the fact that the girl hitting the guy is hilarious the first time, but by the 20th time, you just want to call the police and have her arrested for domestic violence.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's the reaction to that just seems, and I don't know if it's just because anime is typically a very escapist form of entertainment. I mean, it's a lot of it is not particularly, it's not a knock on it, it's just a lot of it's very escapist fare. It wasn't really designed to be critically analyzed, but
I've certainly had that kind of motivation behind reactions. I mean, I know that I did a review for Otaku USA where I did a really scathing negative review of Itsudate My Santa, which was another canon.
Hey, Bamboo has a story about that.
And, I mean, people were angry with me over that review because they were like, you know, oh my God, what's wrong with you? Can't you just enjoy this nice, sweet Christmas show? It's just supposed to make you feel warm and fuzzy about Christmas and make you laugh. And it's not supposed to be this brilliant work of epic literature. So how dare you, you know, why would you criticize it like this? And I'm like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, come on.
People accuse you of ruining Christmas?
Yeah, no, some guy said that I was the worst person in the world and that I was destroying Christmas.
Because you didn't
Because I didn't like some show about some hobag girl and her stupid Santa outfit.
I don't think any of mine were quite that bad, but yeah.
Oh my gosh. Terrible. Just the mere mention of that show still, like, sends convulsions.
But yeah, I mean, there's an element that is sort of allergic to analysis, which makes our jobs much harder, because that's the only, personally, that's the only thing I am interested in, is actual criticism and analysis. That's what makes it interesting to me. I mean, I studied that stuff in school. That's what I like about critique, is that delving, really getting into the material. And people just, they don't seem to like it. Do you guys think there's any value in reviews that don't do that? That are just kind of a surface. Here's a show about ninjas. If you like ninjas, you'll like this. I mean, even without even that strong of a recommendation. Is there a value in those kind of reviews? Because there's a lot of them out there.
It's minimal.
Minimal.
I mean, when I don't read a lot of anime reviews, specifically because so many of them tell you very little about the show. I mean, I don't want to hear... when I'm looking at a review, I don't want to hear the plot setup. I don't want flat descriptions of the characters. I'm looking for comparisons. I'm looking for evocative language. You know, I don't want to hear that just, you know, oh, this character is kind of funny looking. She's got this big, foofy blonde hair. No, don't do that. Compare her to Tony Hawk from 1987.
So those kind of fun cultural references that will that also provide an anchor that let you know what to expect.
Exactly. And you know, another example is just like it's very easy to just talk about the cultural impact of something like Evangelion, but I think it's much more interesting if you attack it from the angle of, okay, this is a this is something that was pretty much ripped off from Zanbot 3, and here's how.
speaking to that, we've had a lot of re-releases lately, and it gets to a point where, you know, I get the third re-release of Akira in my hands. Mm. Do you think that after a certain point in time, it is pointless to write a review of something like Akira or Evangelion or Ninja Scroll? Does it ever just get pointless to do it?
Yeah,
Brad, do you want to take that? Yeah.
I purposely avoid tackling a lot of the blatantly mainstream reviews. Like the stuff that... There's no point in reviewing Lucky Star or reviewing Hadahi. Because everyone and their mother in my audience has watched those shows several times over. It does no good for them. So I would rather spend the time talking about just something else, whether it's poking through for some tiny little show or just suffering my way through The Legend of Moby Dick instead.
Hakugei or whatever.
Yes, I finally finished that show after 2 months.
I'm sorry.
Two months of watching.
Did ADV actually get the whole thing out?
Yes, they did.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Remember, slept through the whole thing.
Come on, Zach, they're a company that finish once they start.
It's true. Look at their manga line. Yeah. So... Also sort of on that tag, reviewers and Bamboo, you've talked about this. Anime reviews are peculiar in that by the time we get around to reviewing them, and most everybody here doesn't talk about fan subs that often. Y'all generally review legit releases. Am I correct on that?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clarissa, you guys, yeah, pretty much, right?
If there's one available.
Yeah.
But we do review stuff that's not officially released.
Right.
What I wanted to add was that, I don't know about you guys, but with the shorter and shorter turnaround times, I sometimes have to resort to unofficial releases just as supplemental material, and I hate doing that.
Yeah, everybody hates doing that. Nobody likes having to use fan subs. But my point here is that by the time we get around to reviewing it, the fans have seen it. They don't wait. They don't wait for the Region 1 release. They don't wait for the DVD. I mean, some do, yes, some do. Plenty of people do. But the vast majority of people responding to your review have already seen the entire thing and will judge your review based on what they thought of the entire show. Even if you're reviewing the first 4 episodes, they will tell you you are wrong because it gets good at episode 20.
Yeah.
I think that's unique. That's unique to anime, I think, because you don't see a lot of film reviews that come out a week early with people screaming at the critic that they're totally wrong because people haven't had a chance to see the movie yet.
So well, that's because anime is so much more easily piratable.
Right. Right, exactly. Do any of you find that frustrating when you get those that sort of response where it feels like you're not informing anyone? You're just putting your voice out there in a professional way, and it allows them to sort of pile on?
You know, it used to bother me a lot. There was a point in my Shelf Live writing days in which it just really bothered me, and I was really frustrated by it. But at some point, I began to realize that nowadays reviews are less about like recommending a product than they are really just a launching point for conversation in the forums. Because now it's like saying like, okay, well, you know, here's this DVD. Everyone's already seen it. Everyone's already going to tell me like, well, it gets so good in season 4. But if you write about it, then people will talk about it. People will talk about it in the forums. And maybe through that, like, maybe there'll be a few people who think, okay, well, based on all of this chatter and based on this review, I might go and buy the show.
So you're saying that the forums conversation has become part of the review process?
I think so.
What do you guys think about that?
That's an interesting idea.
I mean, Mike, you probably don't get quite as much feedback as your average A&N critic since you do most of your work in print, right?
Yeah. I mean, when I did work on Anime Jump, I'd get a fair amount of feedback. But at the same time, there was to use a worn-out term, there was a shelf life to that feedback, and it wasn't really that long. Mm-hmm. I find it interesting the point you were making about people just trying to interject that, well, something gets good later on. It's not good right away, but by X episode, it's really good. And I submit that if a show is not good right off the bat or within an episode or two, that's deeply flawed, because this is entertainment that's designed to get you from the beginning. And if it can't do that, it's going to be a much harder sell.
Hmm.
Yeah, I've always hated that argument, because literally when they say, oh, it gets good in episode 12, that's 4 hours I gotta sit through. That's 4 hours of my life to get to the good part, and you can never tell if it actually gets good or if they're just institutionalized by episode 12, and now they can't see that it's still flawed, they're just into it.
I'm confused that anime fans even sit through all those episodes just to wait for a good show, because if you, like, people who watch US TV, if it's not good in, like, 2 episodes, they stop watching it.
Yeah.
You know, and if people don't keep watching it by, like, episode 4 or 5, it's canceled. Like, that's
I think, sort of the difference between the mass casual audience and the hardcore fan audience in general. I mean, people in American fandom, you know, if a new Star Trek show comes on or something, people who are big Star Trek fans, even if the show sucks, a lot of them are going to stick with it, hoping that it'll get better.
Voyager.
I think the issue is that because anime is such a niche thing, you don't have the huge, really super casual audience that you do with regular domestic television and movies who would drop it after 2 episodes. You mostly have, like, those hardcore people who are more willing to sort of stick it out and almost feel obligated by fandom to watch it.
So then the new definition of hardcore fan is willing to sit through a lot of shit.
Hasn't that always been the definition?
So it seems to me that the difference between the mass casual fan and hardcore fans is excessive boredom and lack of other things to do in life.
That's certainly part of it. I mean, for years, I can't even count how long for in various different fandoms. You know, people always bitch about the stuff, but they still watch it or they still read it.
Yeah,
well, and then, you know, cue your flame war over, well, if you don't like it, you don't have to read it, why don't you just get out of our fandom, you're being so mean, and then it gets awful. But
that has to have a lot to do with youth, too, because when I was first getting into anime, oh, the shit I would sit through. I mean, I can't, like, Funimation put out all 3 seasons of Slayers recently, and I loved that show when I was a budding little anime fan back in the late 90s. I can't, like, looking at it now, I'm like, I sat through all of this? Like, all of these episodes? I really sat through this? This is terrible. Not that Slayers is terrible, but I can't imagine sitting through it now. You know, so maybe it's just a youth thing, where it's like, when you're getting into anime and you're really super into it, the fact that it, you know, you're watching 10 episodes of crap, it doesn't affect you, it doesn't impact you as much. Like, you're more forgiving, you're more willing to sit through it. Maybe that has something to do with it.
I think that's just partially that people tend to have different tastes and different standards and expectations at different ages and different places in their life. I mean, that's kind of universal, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, factoring that into a review, lately we've seen the death of the single disc release. That's gone away, with the exception of a few Japanese...
Finally,
thank God. With the exception of a few Japanese-mandated single-disc releases from Funimation, like Darker Than Black, we've seen the death of that. Now we're getting into box set reviews, which I find much better. You're getting a much better sample of the show. Have you guys found that as you've started reviewing the box sets and as you've been getting into doing these broader releases, because you've all been doing this since the days of the single disc, has your style changed? Have you found that you are, I don't know, more forgiving, or are the reviews getting harder to write because you have to cover more than, you know, 4 or 5 episodes at a time? I'd like to start with Brad on that one.
It actually makes it a hell of a lot easier.
Yeah.
Because now I don't have to sit there and say, well, this has been, you know, like 3 episodes of shit, but it was kind of decent in this last episode. That was what it was like when I was watching Xenosaga, the animation. Mm-hmm. I was like, dear God, please let this end. but of course, one of our other writers, Dale North, was like, fuck yeah, Xenosaga. I can curse on here, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Please.
Okay.
We haven't had enough cursing.
You don't want to open that floodgate with me. But yeah, it was just like, he was a huge fan of that, but I could not see where that was coming. I guess that was just the Xenosaga fanboy in him. But it just makes my life easier to say, okay, well, I've sat through 12 episodes of this, and I know for sure that it's going to be bad. There's no redeeming quality at this point. So like we were saying earlier, yeah, like I don't have to sit through that, oh, it'll be good by episode 20 bullshit, because I can say if it's not good by now, then it's not going to be good, period.
Right, exactly. Mike, do you have any take on that? Has things gotten easier in the days of the box set?
Well, I think with reviewing longer form stuff with more access, I'm not as cynical as I used to be, I'd say. I'm a little more small C Catholic when it comes to stuff. I watch a lot more variety of shows, but at the same time, I'm a lot less forgiving. Like if I have to make a 6-hour commitment to something, if I'm at episode 4 and it's rotten, even if it starts to improve, I'm still going to let it have it with both barrels.
And with good cause. I think it deserves... Maybe as critics, we don't put enough emphasis on the fact that this show is like, you give the show a B+, but you're like, but here's a reminder, the first 3 hours of this is going to sap your life away. Like, you will be wasting your life. Maybe we're not doing that enough. Maybe that's a good criticism to take away from this, is that you should focus a little bit more on the episodes that stink. Because if it is, like Mike said, a 2-4-hour commitment, that's a lot. And people should, you know, be wary of that. Don't just focus on the good part at the end or whatever. So that brings me to scores. I really wanted to talk about the value of scores. Now, to my knowledge, and I checked, you know, your individual work here, none of you actually use scores, right?
God, yeah.
No.
Nope.
Yeah.
Do not.
Well, we do. And it's a big pain in the ass, and I have to assume that you guys don't use scores as a matter of course because they're irritating and people focus on them too much?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, pretty much.
Okay.
It was...
yeah, okay. So... Would you say that, like, so say, like I said, okay, we're not thinking about getting rid of the scores Anime News Network, just so people don't get their hopes up, but if...
You should.
If I know... I hate it, because you'll get people coming into the forums, and they're like, what, the dub gets a B+, like, and they don't understand that's just a review of the show dubbed. Like, it takes forever to explain, and every time somebody new encounters the scores, we have to re-explain what they mean, and I hate the scores. Now, Brad, you do a lot with video games, and scores are a huge part of video game reviewing. Now, does your site eschew the scores for video games?
No, we have scores for video game reviews simply because then we get on Metacritic.
Right, I figured.
That was the whole reason for Destructoid. It was a long, long, long ongoing debate amongst the staff. So when we were doing more and more reviews over on Japanator, I said, well, let's try it And I couldn't really get a good feeling for scoring on Japanator, so I said, just screw it, let's drop it all. And that way we can just focus on the text and not have people jump directly to the score and argue that.
Yeah, they skip the text, they jump to the grade, and then they run into the forums to complain.
Exactly.
It's just completely defeating the point of reading a review.
That, and apparently B's are the new F.
Yeah. Anything lower than an A minus.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
That kind of creep is my nightmare. And some of the, I mean, and the thing is, it's true. It's completely true. In particular, some of the print outlets I've written for have, it's not like you weren't allowed to give anything a really bad score, but they tried to steer you away from it if they could. And for me, it wasn't so much as a new F, but yeah, something got a C. It's pretty much unwatchable.
Right, yeah.
Well, I can understand that in print, because, I mean, I don't, like, when I read any magazine, I don't exactly want to be sitting there reading about stuff that sucks.
I don't know. I like bad reviews. Bad reviews can be a lot of fun. Actually, they're a lot of fun to write.
Definitely.
Oh, sure. They're fun to write. Sometimes they can be hard. That's probably the hardest thing I ever find to write is bad reviews.
Whoa, really? No. The hardest, the absolute hardest thing is the C+. Wow. The C+.
Oh, yeah.
The mediocre. The, well, it was okay. Because that's all you want to say.
I agree.
You know, you write the synopsis, the plot, little plot synopsis, then you go, it's all right. It's hard to get.
Yeah, then I just don't bother reviewing it.
See, you have that luxury. We don't have that luxury. We got to review all this shit. So that brings me, speaking of the evangelist, the fan that, you know, B is the new F, I wanted to talk a little bit about the reaction from fans of key series, Clannad, Air, Canon, Canon, however you pronounce it. Mike, I think you pronounced it deliberately wrong.
actually, no, that was complete ignorance on my part. But the shitstorm it sparked was still a wonderful thing.
I've noticed that there is a certain evangelism among the fans of these shows. If you do not, and I don't know if you guys have had experience with this, but if you do not parrot it's a deep partisanship. It's deep partisanship, and that's. Somebody else described it that way. And I think that's a really good way to put it. If for these specific shows, for Air, for Clannad, for Canon, if you don't directly parrot their exact view of what that show's quality is and why it's good or why it's not good, they get really upset. And not only do they get upset, they tell you, you don't know what you're doing, you're bad at this, you're not a good critic, and you should lose your job or whatever. And I have never seen that kind of fanaticism from any other genre, any other show. Have you guys had any experience with that?
Well,
I know you have.
In my experience, yeah, they'll come out of the woodwork if you criticize the key shows. On the other hand, I'm convinced that there's about 8 of them.
I'm starting to think that. I'm starting to come around, because it is the same, like, 10 guys.
Yeah, I think somewhere there is a small closed community of these supporters. Like a forum somewhere, a members-only forum, where they plot their attacks. So every once in a while, a negative review of something will come out, and suddenly half a dozen people will come rolling in, yelling the same criticisms at you at once.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's orchestrated.
Right. Maybe that's a good point. Maybe there's a conspiracy, because you could literally just copy paste, because the shows all have, you know, some same harem moe thing, with tragedy, and there's. The girl doesn't know she's a ghost or whatever the fuck. You can just copy-paste.
Oh, she's actually a fox. What?
I could go on at great length.
You can copy-paste the names in and out of these situations, and then the criticism is always the same. You are, insert, unprofessional, you're biased, whatever. Maybe you're right. Maybe there is a conspiracy. Brad, you said you basically just don't even touch that stuff.
See, I guess that's the benefit of having like a staff that all equally shares the responsibility of writing. But I don't think we've ever actually, like, straight up bashed Clannad or any of the key shows. So now I'm kind of tempted for Friday to just put up a post, just totally flame baiting, making fun of Clannad.
See if it's the same 10 guys that come over to Japan.
May as well. I mean, I can do that stuff if I want to.
Now, Clarissa,
what you need?
Oh, go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, what you need to do is point out how badly animated it is. These shows escape a lot of criticism because they have very good character artwork continuity. Yeah. There's a very clean look to it, but if you look at the way the camera moves, the animation is actually quite minimal, and that's something that's always bothered me about those shows.
But they get high praise for being well animated, but they're really not.
Yeah, they just have a nice, consistent look to their character designs. And the thing is, it's sad because that's gotten unusual in anime, and it didn't used to be that way.
staying on model actually has always been a problem for especially Gonzo.
Well, yeah, you're right. Who am I kidding? I've seen Armored Trooper Toms.
Hell, anything out of soft X from the 90s. Good lord. Nothing looked the same from frame to frame. Okay. Yeah. I wanted to point out, Clarissa, you have one of the hosts on your show is a little infamous for his anti-Moe stance, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
Have you guys had the flood of key supporters come into your comments?
Well, yeah, Daryl's pretty famously anti-Moe, but I was actually the one who insulted Kanan on the show. You know, it's kind of interesting because we do have a few people come in, and we've had a few people write in regarding comments in Otaku USA, but we haven't talked about it as much in there. For AWO, I don't know, I think we have like a weird fan base that is not sort of maybe like the rest of the anime fandom at large.
It
and
is
I think
different.
A lot of people just completely ignore us. So I think a lot of people don't even know when we say bad things about their show. But sometimes we do get a few people that decide to email us or come into the blog comments and complain. I think a lot of people complain in their own blogs or in forums, like this shit that's going down right now with the Ava forum that's got their panties in a bunch about Daryl. But I kind of got too lazy to Google the podcast or myself and look for what people are saying, and I don't really care that much.
It's a good attitude
at this point. So I think a lot of times there are probably people who are complaining, and I just don't see it because they're doing it elsewhere.
Yeah, one thing I really want to mention this when it comes to the fans of the key shows, it's you always have to make this distinction. They're not all like that. Some of them are just normal anime fans that happen to like these shows. I mean, specifically, we are referring to the kind that are religiously in worship of these shows.
We're talking about the crazy people.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this and you're like, hey, I like that, and I'm not, yes, we know you're not like that. It's okay, settle down. I always get the same complaints. It's like, hey, we're not all like that. Yes, I'm aware lots of people like those shows for totally legitimate reasons, but you should tell the people that... You should tell the people that, those of you that out there that are level-headed and reasonable, go tell the people that leap on any B-plus review of them as though it is sacrilegious. Tell them to settle down, please.
Yeah. See, I actually like key shows. I like Air a lot. Like, I love Air.
Uh-huh.
But apparently I don't love it enough, because even if I said, like, oh, man, you know, Air is really great, it's really charming, I cry, blah, 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 there's always some guy that's like, well... You mentioned that, some kind of thing, like, oh, you mentioned that she was such and such. Like, she's not actually dead. She's actually this. And I'm like, dude, like, come on. I just said I like the show, and you're still bitching about the fact that I, like, you know, slightly changed one detail. Like, just get over it, guys.
You clearly didn't like it enough.
I'm clearly
biased. You clearly misunderstood the character motivation behind Kanoko-chan. okay. Okay, so, all right, well, we have, that was great. Do any of you have something to plug? You want to plug on the show? Because we got to get to Twitter questions.
Visit japanitor.com.
Okay.
Yeah, www.animeworldorder.com for the AWO podcast.
Mike, you got anything coming up?
You can see my work in Otaku USA. Right now, I'm chipping away at a full-length review of the new Evangelion movie.
Oh, boy. That sure is a fun one to review.
don't sweat it. I'll be gentle.
Okay, so Twitter time. All right, from DJ Tyrant. Is there a specific way you review a genre of show, harem, mecha, etc., or do you review them all in the same way? I'm going to say the responsible critic may have his personal biases, but approaches everything with an open mind. So, you know, they may have had bad experiences with the moe genre, they may have had bad experiences with the mecha genre, but they approach everything with an open mind. They don't just go in saying, this is a mecha show, I'm not going to like it. They approach everything with an open mind. What do you guys think? I guess we should sort of go in order here. So, Mike, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, I've been described by some folks online that I have biases against certain genres. And over the years, I kind of disagree. I come in with some preconceived notions, but for the most part, I don't shy away from anything, or, you know, I try not to be lazy about stuff. Even if it's something that looks like, oh, I might not like this, I'm going to watch it full to the full extent and just try to give a good accounting. I think I do that with everything. I don't think I'm harsher on some stuff than other stuff.
All right, Brad.
I either review things that I know I'm going to love or things that I know I'm going to hate, and so I more so try to tackle it with just fun than being, you know, like a proper reviewer. Mm-hmm. And if there are biases there, so what? You get that feeling coming into my review already.
Clarissa?
Well, I think everybody has types of shows that they're not as into. I won't say that I don't have that, but I do try to keep an open mind. And it's not like with certain genres that I'll never give a show in that a fair shake. You know, I'm always give it the benefit of the doubt. Some people have accused me of being more biased maybe than I think I am, but...
Yeah, well, I think people are always going to be harder on other people's biases than they are on their own. Mm. You know, there are people that I've encountered that are just biased against me. They just don't like me. And so, you know, they're more than happy to rip apart anything I say or do because they just don't like me. And that's their bias, you know? That's not necessarily that my opinion is wrong. They just don't like me. Bamboo?
Yeah, actually, I approach everything the same way, although I have found out that if I don't like a certain show, then suddenly people think that I'm biased against the entire genre. Mm. Curiously enough, but I don't know. I don't buy it.
Didn't like Gurren Lagann? You must hate all robot shows. Okay.
Someone actually said that to me. They said I hated all mecha because I didn't like some... I don't even remember what it was.
Probably
it was
some garbage.
Some garbage robots and like girls with boobs and I don't remember.
Tanizuki
no Miko.
It might have been. It might have been. And then they decided that I hated all mecha anime and I didn't understand Gundam. I was like, what? Like... Did I even mention Gundam? No, but whatever.
There, you know what? It's funny because you get the "you just don't get it" thing a lot. None of this stuff is difficult to understand, but I will fully cop to the fact that often I don't get why people like it. Like, I certainly don't get that, you know? That's a mystery to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's always a risk with genre stuff of, depending on the audience, I mean, if the people who are reading your review are sort of the general audience, it won't necessarily matter. They won't notice. But when you have people who are aficionados of a certain genre or a certain, you know, type of thing, and you don't maybe know as much about it, that is going to be an issue. And I guess at that point, you have to decide as a reviewer whether you care about that community's reaction. It's sort of like when you have people who review movies based on comic books, regular people who read that review are going to have a different viewpoint and a different set of expectations than people who know about comic books and, you know, maybe want a reviewer that's going to address the movie and how it compares to the source material and comic book tropes and things like that.
Yeah, but that's a little different because while I think that movie reviews by someone who is basically just inspecting it to see how close it is to the source material and then giving the movie a yay or nay based on its fidelity to the comics, that to me, those reviews are always worthless. I don't care how close it is to the source material. I want it to be a good movie. That's what I care about. With anime, while people complain about bias, I would say some of the best reviews I've ever read are people who are hyper knowledgeable about mecha series and the history of the genre. And reading their review of a new mecha show, like, that expertise can really help you. Even if you're even if the world's biggest mecha fan goes in to review Gurren Lagann, you know he's going to like it. But he might have real insight because he knows so much about the genre. So I would say there are cases where that bias does help you.
Well, no, I mean, I think it does. And that's the point that I was trying to make. But it depends on the audience. I mean, ultimately, like you said, there's so many different people that are reviewing that what, as a reader, you have to do is you have to determine what it is that you're looking to find in a review. And you have to find reviewers who, number one, have opinions that tend to align with yours, so you know that what they say about a show is going to be meaningful to you. Or maybe whose opinions are always the polar opposite of yours. Right. So, like, if they hate something, you know, you're probably going to really like it.
Yeah, we have a lot of readers that do that. They're like, well, if Carl hated it, I'm going to like it, and that's right. Fine. You know what? Then that's great. Then Carl's reviews are serving its purpose.
Sure. You know. Yeah. So you know, you just have to find. So I mean, based on what you want out of that review, whether you want that genre expertise or not, then you're going to find that reviewer.
Right. Okay. From Tim Mon at timmonbooks.com. The great blog if you haven't read it. At ANN, and for the whole panel, have you ever felt pressured by or come into conflict with an advertiser over a review? I'll answer that first. In the bad old days, certain companies that, ADV doesn't really exist anymore, so I guess I can say this. But back in the bad old days of ADV, they basically would threaten to stop sending you screeners if they didn't like what you said about some of their shows. If you didn't write positive reviews, they would cut you off. Thankfully, that practice has gone away completely, and everybody's a lot more professional now. But did you guys ever have any experience with that of a company, giving you shit for a bad review or pressuring you to give it a good review?
I've run into that in the video game world. PR people there are a lot more pushy, and there has been an instance of, actually a couple, where I've given a bad review, and then later the PR person tried to tap, actually another writer who was working on Japanator, saying, well, here, why don't they do a second review? We send them a copy. And I'm like, no, we put a review up. It stands. That's the score we give it. And we didn't, you say we didn't understand the game. Well, whatever. This is what we've decided on. So you're just going to have to deal with it. The game sold like shit anyways. But
with video games, those scores do equal sales. It is a much more direct relationship.
Oh, yeah.
It's a much more direct relationship. Whereas in anime, if somebody says this show sucks, the fans have already seen it and are just making a decision as to whether or not they want to buy it. Anyway, so it's not quite the same thing, but that's an interesting
yeah, take. But I mean, like in anime, in manga, like I've given stuff a bad review and people are like, ah, haha, that's too bad, oh well. I've never really had anyone pressure like ADV has with you guys.
That was a long time. I should point out that was a long time ago.
Oh yeah.
Many years ago.
Mike, did that ever happen to you? I mean, I know it has, but did you ever?
Oh, yeah, yeah, and I'm willing to be specific. When ADV released their little self-produced Sin video game.
God.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of naked aggression, but their publicists at the time were a bit snippy with me. The screeners I was getting dried up for a little while, but things eventually got back on track. Other than that, I would sometimes get feedback from marketing folks. It was often very friendly. Just I think this has merit because of this. No one ever really tried to shut me down. Aside from that, what has happened a couple of times is there is a certain dub director who is still working. So I will not name this person, but they've gotten very defensive about the shows that they've worked on, even when the shows are terrible and the reviewer isn't really necessarily attacking the dubbed version.
Yeah, I was about to say the closest example I can think of that still happens is when someone shit cans a dub, and I wind up running into the director or the actor at an anime convention, and they clearly have a chip on their shoulder about it. That's kind of the only time, is when they take it weirdly personally. And I can understand, it's a creative profession, but still, if the dub is for some god-awful show. Clarissa, you ever experienced anything like that?
With the podcast, it's kind of hard to tell. I mean, we get some screeners, but because we're on sort of a different schedule and we're not doing as much of a regular sort of review farming type of thing, I'm not really sure if the companies that tended to never want to send us screeners, if it was because we just weren't important enough, or if it was because we were very open about saying if we didn't like things. It was very difficult to tell. Luckily, with Otaku USA directly, I've never had to deal with that. I know with editorial, there's always issues because you have to negotiate companies being willing to give you artwork and things like that, and sometimes, that can get affected. But I don't want to say anything specific. But I personally, I've never been asked to, change a review or anything. So
right, I don't think anyone's ever been asked to change what they said about something. Okay, from Shiroi Hane, have you ever had a review misquoted, misattributed, or taken out of context on product packaging?
Yes,
that's actually never happened to me. All the quotes I've had with my name on them, I was pretty proud of. I've never had the .. great fun .. attribute it to me or something like that. But it sounds like some of you have. So starting with Bamboo, have you ever been completely misquoted or misattributed?
Yeah, so I was misquoted for hentai. I don't remember which one it was. But I wrote a really sarcastic review saying how it was like a cinematic tour de force. And
was
like,
it the Duchess of Busty
Mads? No, it was not the Duchess of Busty Mads. It was like Bible Black or some. I don't know, it was one of the, I don't remember what it was. It was just one of those hentai shows, and it was just really sarcastic, tongue-in-cheek, like, oh, man, this is so great, what a masterpiece, blah, blah, blah. And the next time, I guess they re-released it, and I saw it in an anime convention, I was picking up, like, oh, man, this show is terrible. And I look at the back, I'm like, and there's a quote from me, and I'm like, God, fuck you,
guys.
Was
your name on it?
It was not on it, thank God. But I recognized it.
As you.
And I was so pissed off, because I was like, dude, this is not cool. Like, I hated this show, and then there's
me. And it's a hentai, which makes
Yeah, there's
worse.
Me being like, man, this hentai is so great. Fuck you.
Mike?
In CPM's catalog from a few years back, they quoted me in their copy that they had for the film Odin, Photon Space Sailor Starlight. spinning a very, very fabulously negative review into something positive, which that endlessly amuses me. I loved that. I've still got a copy of that catalog. I think that's great. Dishonest, but great.
There is an element that's very amusing about it. I mean, you can't really take this stuff too seriously. Brad, you ever been misquoted?
Well, we've only been quoted twice so far, because I guess we're the youngin amongst all of you. Mm. But the first quote was for The Wallflower.
Mm.
And yeah, I mean, like, I certainly had no high hopes for the show, but we were quoted as, you know, being like makings of a great anime or something generic like that. Like, this was based upon not even like anything Funimation had sent us. This was based on like the Volume 1 DVD that we had gotten from ADV back in the day. I was like, you guys really must have been digging in order to pick that of all.
They picked the quote that said, this could be okay, I guess.
Yeah.
I love the quotes they get are sometimes a little desperate. The cover of Dragonaut had a sticker on it that said, from the character designer of Witchblade.
That's CPM's old marketing strategy, from the X of Y.
Yeah.
Like, you know, for casting from the director of Nadesco, because those two have so much in common.
The one I always remember was when they used to advertise this show called Shamanic Princess. And they used to put this sticker on it that would advertise it by connection to Clamp, which was hilarious to me because nobody from Clamp actually had any involvement on that. What happened was it had the same animation character designer who had worked on another show based off a Clamp manga.
But
Clamp was not involved at all, and yet they would use like Clamp as like a selling point.
From the Key Grip, who brought you Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, I was pretty desperate.
Okay, moving on. From Shintaku, what's the difference from a professional source to, let's say, a blog review? What makes a difference? What makes it different when you're being paid to review? Well, you answered your own question. You're getting paid. That's pretty much it. And you probably have an editor, and there are expectations you have to meet, and you can't just write super blog, live journal style, I thought this, I thought that. Most people
you
expect.
Can't,
go ahead, Mike.
You can't. Yeah, you cannot use emoticons.
Yeah,
that's the big
please, no memes. I mean, there is a difference. Most professional writers these days who actually do make a living doing it, make a living writing, they've been doing it long enough. They probably have a degree in something remotely related, like a film degree or a journalism degree. I mean, there are credentials people have. It's not just this sort of Wild West situation. But professional writers, yeah, there's a reason they're getting paid, because they can meet deadlines, they're easy to work with, they're not completely obsessed with their own opinion, they're not married to their copy, they expect it to be edited. You know, these are the qualities of a professional writer. Those are the people I try to hire. Anybody have anything to add to that?
I think the biggest difference is just that for something like our podcast, or if you have your own blog, you know, like Brad was saying, you sort of have a luxury of picking what you want to talk about. You know, on AWO, we can talk about whatever we want to talk about. We can talk about things that were released 20 or 30 years ago, and we do quite often. Mm-hmm. We can talk about things that are not out in America yet, or things that will probably never be out in America. We can skip all of the things that are completely mediocre that we don't think we're going to be able to get a good review out of. When you're getting paid for it, a lot of times you don't get to do that. You sort of, it's like, oh, hey, here's this thing. Now you have to review it. And so you end up having to figure out what to say about the show that is completely generic and bland. And you're stuck talking about things that you probably never would have chosen to talk about, which can be tough.
Yeah. Okay. briefly from Hisui RT, this guy's from Reverse Thieves. I got to condense this because we're getting short on time here. But what's the worst thing you've had to review, and what would you go back and review again? I already have an answer for this. Worst thing I've ever had to review is Dragon Ball Evolution by a long shot, a wide margin. There were so many painful things about that. And the thing I would go back and review again would be Steam Boy, which I gave a gushing A-plus review to like 5 years ago, and it's not an A-plus. That movie is not an A-plus. I should rewrite that. Maybe when they put it out on Blu-ray, I can revisit, sit through that shit again. But Steam Boy, I would go back and give it maybe a B. Anybody else?
The worst thing I've ever had to review was Malice at Doll. That was the worst piece of shit ever invented.
And
I'm still really angry at Chris for sending that to me. And then if I could go back and rewrite a review, it would be Love Hina, because when I first watched it, I was like, yeah, this is the best show ever. This is so funny and hilarious. And the first DVD that was released still has that quote on the back, in which I was like, yeah, this is the best show ever or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I would go back and give it, like, a C.
Anybody? Mike?
Worst thing I've had to review, I could think of many examples. What I will point out is that it is so much worse to have to watch something that is merely extremely mediocre than something that's actually really terrible. Like, worst things I've had to review, let's see, I'd say Devadasi, Jewel Bem Hunter Lime,
oof,
you know, the Moyo Ken OVA. Things that you just have to struggle to say anything at all about.
Yeah.
Those are always the toughest. As for what I would like to go back and review again, one title that comes to mind is one of the first two or three reviews I ever published on Anime Jump is a review of the Space Adventure Cobra film. And I feel like I'm at a point where I could say a lot more about that film than what I said there. What I said there, you know, it was praising what I still think is a good work, but it was really just kind of brief and unfocused. And it's something I think I would like to revisit.
Anybody else, Brad?
I don't really have anything that I would say I'd revisit. I just kind of keep plowing ahead and don't really look back at too much of my work. But probably the worst thing I've had to sit through was actually recently. I went to go see the documentary Yasukuni by this Chinese director. And it was the most awkward, amateurish documentary I've ever seen. Like, you could literally have given the camera to a middle schooler and he would have produced the same thing. Like, he must have been doing like 90% of the interviews under false pretenses, because he walks into a room with like an 80-year-old swordsmith who made swords for Yasukuni, which they used to, you know, behead Chinese people during the occupation. And he's like, so what did you think about the beheadings in Nanking? And the guy just like awkwardly turns away. Just, he does not want to be there. And the shots just stay on him so long. And so it was painful to sit through. And then to try to coalesce all of that hatred into a coherent review was even harder. And that's what I'm trying to do now with another film that I saw called The Sun, which is about Hirohito in the last days of World War II. It's, again, absolutely horrible.
Yeah, worst thing in terms of the thing that was most unpleasant to sit through, probably Itsudate My Santa. Worst thing in terms of something that was just generic and I just did not know what to say, probably Shuffle. I didn't know what to say about that because it was just so generic. In terms of revisiting, I mean, honestly, I don't think there's anything I wouldn't rewrite if given the opportunity. I mean, I'm sure that there isn't a single thing I've written that couldn't be improved somehow.
Okay, now we have a bunch more Twitter questions, but we are completely, basically out of time. There's one I wanted to get to that came in via email that I think is important, and I'd like everybody to answer this. I'm just going to paraphrase it briefly. What is your responsibility as a critic to your audience, and who do you believe your audience is? And I guess we'll start with Bamboo.
I think that my responsibility is to be completely honest with them. And that is like, So if I didn't like a show, I don't care if everyone else in the world liked it except me. I'm going to tell them that I didn't like the show, and I'm going to tell them why. Because I don't want to lie to my readers, and that to me is like number one.
Mike?
I'd really just say keep it pretty similar to Bamboo. It's really just speak with as much integrity and as much wit as I can. I like to entertain as well as inform, and get the information out there to the people and hope that they take something good away from what I've written.
And sounds like enjoy the experience.
Well, yeah, that goes without saying.
Right. Brad?
My primary thing is actually to entertain the reader. I really want to try to make them feel whatever I felt while watching the show. So if I was wanting to slap myself in the eyes, I want to make them feel like they were there experiencing it with me. That's really my main goal for everything on Japanator, is to entertain my readers first and foremost.
Clarissa?
Kind of similar. I mean, I want to try and be honest about whatever it was I thought. And I also like to try and be informative, maybe help the audience make some connection or learn something that they didn't know before, or just kind of feel like they took something worthwhile away from it, if possible.
Well, I agree with all of that. And personally, I think not only to entertain, inform, be honest, it's also to provide an opinion that has a concrete analysis beneath it. You have to support your opinion. If you're going to take on the mantle of critic, you can't just be, I liked it or I didn't like it. You really have to get into it. I think that's the responsibility to the audience. And I think a new responsibility that's popping up, and one that I am certainly trying to get closer to, is to try to avoid bringing in the politics of fandom into every review. Because that leaks into almost everything, and it's really hard to keep it out. But I think as a focus moving forward, keeping the politics of fandom out of a review and just talking about the show is becoming an increasingly more important thing to do. So I think that's pretty much where I stand. Okay, so we are at over an hour. This is the longest AnCast ever, which I thought it might be. But I really want to thank you guys for being on the show. Thank you so much. We scratched the surface of this huge topic, and we'll probably do another show on it in the future. So thank you guys all so much.
Thanks
for having us.
Okay, thanks. And we will see you all next week.